this half-assed conspiracy. Vic picked her way down the street, a mass of slushy footprints, black-stained snow gathered in the gutters and against the doorsteps. She went against the crowd, as always, and thought about everything that could go wrong. She'd flung a wide net when she scraped this half-assed conspiracy together. She'd had to give it any chance of working. It had closed around some of the last people she'd have trusted. Savine Brock, as ruthless a schemer as you could hope never to be in business with. Her husband Leo, whose recklessness had already wrecked one attempt at treachery. Corporal Tunney, a legend in the husk dens and gambling houses for his big mouth and small courage. His sidekick Yoke, who from her brief acquaintance appeared to be one of the stupidest men in creation. Then there was the linchpin of the whole business, King Orso, born with a silver spoon so far up his arse you could see the end when he yawned. Vic's best hope was that his valet could stop him making a fatal blunder. A 14-year-old he'd hired while she was working as a laundry girl in a brothel. The one person she actually trusted was Tallow, and he was the one person she'd made sure to keep entirely out of it. All those hard-learned lessons from the camps, all the painstaking risks and calculations, all the lies she'd told to make sure she stayed on the winning side, all pissed away in one moment of folly. She paused at a corner to tap the dirty snow from her boots and to take another careful glance back while she was doing it. That big bastard in the hood was still on the other side of the street, face hidden, except for a scraggy grey beard on a heavy jaw. She'd been worried he was following. Now she was sure. There was something in the way he stood that she didn't like at all, slightly hunched around his left side, as if he was trying to hide a weapon that was too big to conceal. Tempers were short in the market, stocks were low and dwindling, prices high and climbing. A beefy labourer was arguing with the fishmonger, feet planted wide and finger-stabbing. Vic slipped up through the crowd and, in passing, slid her hand between the labourer's legs from behind and gently cupped his balls. He spun around, but by then she was considering the second-hand cutlery on the next stall. "What the—" The labourer grabbed the nearest man, started snarling in his face. Vic dropped and slithered under a wagon, darting through the press bent double, gripping her bad hip tight to stop it aching, folk all straining up on tiptoe to see the blazing row behind. She slipped through the doorway of a pawn shop she knew, which had another door at the far side onto the middle way. She nodded to the clerk as he frowned at her over his cracked eye lenses, pulled her collar up against the cold, and joined the hunched crowds shuffling south. It was busy in the tavern, noisy with idle chatter and hot with wasted breath, the windows misted so the street outside became a sparkling blur. One of those places where rich young men gather to pretend to be poor young men and vomit up whatever point of view they last heard. One of those places where rich young men once brayed for a great change, and now drank hard and hoped desperately it would go away again. She'd made sure she was early, but her contact was there ahead of her. A nondescript fellow with a sprig of holly on his lapel, an empty glass, and a plate of unappetizing sausages in front of him.
"Inspector Teufel. And you are?"
"An employee of Chancellor Sartorius of Sipani," though he spoke with no accent at all. She slid into the chair opposite.
"Were you followed?"
"No."
"Were you?"
She glanced about the room without seeming to, but there was no sign of the big man who'd been following her. Just a plump woman in an expensive hat splashed red, reading a poem about the horrors of watching one's children starve.
"No."
"Good. You should try these."
And he slid his plate across towards her, breathing the words, "A gift from Princess Carlotte."
"Looks good,"
she lied, and drew the plate close so the packet underneath it dropped into her lap. She took a bite from one of the sausages.
"And it tastes as good as it looks."
That at least was no lie. But those eating were the lucky ones. Food that tasted good was a true extravagance these days.
That concludes our business, said Chancellor Sartorius's nondescript man. Good luck with your endeavors.
Vic caught his wrist as he got up to leave.
She realizes I can't make any promises.
If there is a chance it will help her brother, she is content. And he nodded briefly and disappeared into the crowd. Behind him, a set of young men clashed their tankards together, sent up a spray of froth, and dissolved into raucous laughter. Oh, to be a careless young idiot! She stopped beside a boy selling matches, so swaddled by his scarf he could barely see.
First, give me some matches, she said,
holding out a silver mark so his eyes lit up.
Then?
Vic made sure not to turn.
Do you see a big man watching me, with a hood and a grey beard?
The boy glanced past her.
He stopped maybe 20 strides back.
She bared her teeth. Bastard had picked up her trail again somehow.
I'm going to take a left here. You hold him up as long as you can. For another mark, I'll fight him. Good lad.
She pushed another coin into his hand.
But you can leave that to me.
She ducked past him, darted in front of a skeletal horse, dragging a near-empty cart, and slipped around the corner, down an alley into one of those blackened scars in the city. Someone had set a fire, burned one of the southerners' temples down, taken a few streets with it. Now the houses yawned empty. Blackened rafters, scorched windows, glimpses of charred wreckage through the broken doorways. Quiet here. That soft, muffled silence that comes with snow. A few sets of tracks from people taking refuge in the ruins or doing dark business of one kind or another, but they'd partly filled up with the most recent fall. She stomped a dozen clear boot prints into the white, then backed up quick, planting her feet in the track so she made no more. She gathered herself, then sprang sideways into a dripping doorway, pressing her back against the scorched plaster. She made herself silent, made herself small, and waited. She could have slipped away, but if this bastard had found her twice, he'd find her again, and when he did, it might be him who got the jump on her. She had to know who he was, who'd sent him, in which of the thousand possible ways her rickety plan had shaken apart. There could be a dozen burners waiting right now at her apartment, with a fistful of letters from the king and her name all over them. She had to know. She slid out her stick, heavy, hard, and black. One thing that hadn't changed when the Inquisition became the Inspectorate. A blunt tool for digging out answers, but a shockingly effective one used the right way. Amazing, the problems you can solve with a piece of wood. It all reminded her of the camps, the snow, the cold, the dark, the waiting for a man in the shadows with a stick and a clenched jaw. She heard him coming, heavy footsteps crunching in the snow. He saw the prince, a muttered curse. Then he strode past the doorway, head down, following the trail. His hand was in his coat, she thought. On the hilt of a weapon, maybe? And she gripped her stick tighter and slipped from the doorway. His back was still to her, but he was even bigger than she'd thought. A terribly sturdy look to his shoulders. No way she could risk giving him any chances. Hit first, hard as you can. Chances after. Her heart was thudding in her ears as she crept up behind him. He'd reached the end of the trail, was casting about, trying to work out what had happened. She took one more careful step towards him, then winced at a twinge in that bloody hip of hers. Snow crunched faintly under her boot as she raised the stick. His head whipped round, a glimpse of his grey-bearded face, the corner of an eye. She bared her teeth as she swung for the side of his knee, but at the last moment he lifted his leg and it caught the meat of his calf with a dull smack. He didn't go down. He didn't even cry out. a little grunt maybe, and a stumble sideways. As he turned, she'd set herself and was already bringing the stick down overhand with all the strength she had. He jerked his head to the side and the stick thudded into his shoulder. He didn't even grunt this time, just took a half step back. She swung again, but he caught it on one forearm, brushed it off, and came at her so fast she barely even saw it, let alone got out of the way. Vic had been hit plenty, but she'd never been hit so hard. She folded up like a paper bag, stick tumbling from her numb fingers, and she was on her knees in the snow with her jaw hanging open and a string of spit dangling from her lip, making a kind of helpless wheeze with her arms clutched around her and great jolting waves of pain throbbing from the side of her stomach. She'd a knife in her boot, but she couldn't move. She couldn't even breathe. He squatted down in front of her, but she couldn't see anything higher than his knees.
"Inspector Teufel, the king's servant told me to find you."
There was no mistaking that high little voice. It was Bremer Dan Gorst.
"There's no one else here?"
he asked as she shouldered the door open. She almost laughed, but even that sent a flash of pain through her side.
"No, there's no one else here."
Her last guest had been Tallow, when she paid him for betraying his friends. She glanced at Gorst.
"Ever feel like you made some bad choices?"
He didn't answer. Somehow she took that for a yes. She limped down the hall, so narrow he had to turn his great shoulders slightly sideways to fit. Damn, the place was cold. Felt colder inside than out. She eased herself down beside the little table in the little dining room, fumbled out those matches she'd bought, and lit the stub of candle. She sat back, gripping her side. Gorst stood in the doorway, faint light chiseling shadows into his slab of a face.
"Does it hurt?"
"Only when I breathe."
She'd a suspicion he'd cracked a rib or two.
"Didn't hurt you, did I?"
He put her stick down carefully on the table and shook his head.
"You could pretend, couldn't you, for the sake of my pride?"
"You're joking?"
He said it as an honest question, as if he couldn't really have told the difference.
"I'm trying. Guess we all like to think we're tougher than we are. Having the illusion shattered is never pleasant."
She waved a hand towards the empty cupboards, a couple of the doors still broken from when the breakers first stormed the Agrient.
"I'd offer you something, but I don't have anything."
She looked around the room as if seeing it through new eyes. If the place where you lived was a glimpse into your life, then hers could hardly have been emptier. The dusty squares board that was never played with, the dusty books that were never read. Apart from Sybalt's well-thumbed copy of The Life of Dab Sweet, maybe. But looking at one picture over and over, while you think about everything you've thrown away, hardly counts.
"Not really used to having guests," she muttered.
"Nor I to being one."
Gorst pushed back his hood. Vic remembered him with his whole head rigorously shaved. Now he had grey thatch around the sides and a wispy tuft on top. He looked more like an oversized lawyer than a swordsman.
"Corporal Tunney was hiding me in his..."
"Knocking shop?"
"The burners visited. I was obliged to climb out of the window."
"Must have bigger windows than I'd have expected."
"It was a squeeze."
Gorst gave a puzzled frown.
"I stand accused of being a royalist."
"Well, you did lead the Knights of the Body for 2 kings. Don't get much more royalist than that."
"And you?"
"I did dirty work for 2 arch-lectors, I suppose. I grew up in the camps."
She sat with her mouth open a moment, wondering where to go with that.
"You learn to stand with the winners."
"And what brings you to the losing side?"
It was a good question. A woman who'd suffered more than most under the old regime, who'd had her childhood and her youth and her family stolen by it. No one should have rejoiced in its fall more than her, but here she was, risking her life to restore it. I've seen enough folk thrown off the Tower of Chains, and I quite like King Orso. A strange thing for her to say. She hardly even knew the man. Just that little bit of appreciation he'd given her when she came back from Westport, and his hand on hers in a room under the House of Questions. Was that all it took to win her devotion? Maybe Glockter had been right. She really was desperate for something to be loyal to. You can stay here for now. Doubt they'll be looking for you a few hundred strides from the Court of the People. And they've plenty of others to chase. Seems to me they don't care much who they execute, as long as there's a queue.
What were you doing?
He asked.
In that tavern.
Don't trust me? He said nothing. She supposed where the king's safety was concerned, a first guard trusts no one. I was getting these. She winced as she pulled the packet out from behind her belt and slipped it onto the table. Jewels. From the king's sister in Sepani. We're going to use them to buy the city gates.
Greed still works?
She snorted. People are still people. There was a heavy knock at the door. Vic met Gorst's eye and put a finger to her lips, a pointless gesture, since he barely spoke anyway. He pressed himself to the wall and silently slid out his short steel, a forearm's length of immaculately polished metal catching the candlelight. So those dozen burners she'd been expecting had done the clever thing and waited for her to get home before paying a visit. She grimaced as she bent down and slid the knife from her boot, holding it out of sight behind her arm. "Coming!" she called breezily as she strolled down the hall while her heart thudded in her ears. She tried to pull the door open as if she was guilty of nothing and had no broken ribs, then felt a giddy rush of relief, then a giddy rush of pain as she breathed in too hard.
"What is it, Tello? I've got company."
He stood there in the chilly dusk, staring up at her.
"Hadn't heard from you in a day or two. I was worried. Then, you know, I heard voices. And the only reason a man would darken my door is to kill me, is it?"
She shifted to block the doorway. Not hard to do. It wasn't a big doorway.
"We've all got needs, Tello."
He looked first surprised, then slightly disturbed by the idea that she might have needs.
"Oh, right. I appreciate your concern."
He stood staring at her. She wafted her fingers off into the night.
"You can go."
And she shouldered the door shut. She leaned against the wall for a moment, holding her side and breathing carefully, not too shallow, not too deep. Then she walked back down the hall, slipped around Gorst and over to the window, twitched the shutter back a chink to make sure Tallow was on his way.
"You don't trust him,"
muttered Gorst.
"I don't trust anyone."
It was easier to tell herself that somehow than to admit she didn't want to put him in danger. She watched him trudge off, hunched through the snow, until he was lost around the corner. Damn, he was like her brother. She glanced at Gorst, a slit of faint light down his lined face, a slice of scraggy beard, and a wisp of greasy hair over his forehead.
"So, the two of us are the great hope?"
She held her side as she lowered herself gingerly back into her chair.
"Fates help the Union."